This is Kelly Henderson, and you are listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast. This week, my guest is singer-songwriter Kelly Bannon, who I have known for years in Nashville. We've also just kind of grown up in the music industry here together. I personally love hearing people's stories, and especially the imperfect behind-the-scenes stories of what it truly takes to make it in this industry. Kelly talks about her journey from growing up in Nashville and getting a record deal to having songs on the radio and then now making music completely on her own. She also has a really great podcast called This Nashville Life that breaks down the behind the scenes of the Nashville music industry even more. So we talk about all of that and also her new music and just being a woman in the country music world and how that's changed or maybe not changed in the last year. Here's our conversation. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Oh my gosh, Kelly Bannon, singer-songwriter Kelly Bannon is here.
Hi.
I can't believe I haven't had you on before because I feel like not a week goes by where someone does not say to me, either they start talking to me and they're like, Kelly, and I answer and they think they're talking to you, or they tell me, has anyone ever said to you, you look just like Kelly Bannon?
I think that is a massive compliment.
Well, thanks.
I would love your thighs. I'm like, that's such, whenever anyone says that, I'm like, that's such a compliment. That's like me 7 years ago when I was seven to 10 pounds lighter.
God, I love you.
And I'm not as tall as you. But, you know, I will say, and I think when I'm looking at you, it's not like we're mere images of each other, but we do look a lot alike. Yeah. I don't love how long and oval my face is, but when I look at your face, I'm like, her face is amazing.
Mine's also long and oval.
Really,
so.
You know, I have to do some shading to like...
Same, especially in pictures, the contour is needed. We definitely have the same coloring too. Yeah. And I think the same name situation makes it even more confusing.
That's a whole other level.
Yes.
Because my manager, I used to be managed by a woman named Carrie Edwards.
Yeah.
Do you ever get confused for being
Carrie? A little bit sometimes, yeah.
So less than the two of us. But when we were working together, I think that confused people so much. So I would know because they would call me Carrie. It's a little tricky with us. Someone will just start talking about something and I'm like, wait, I think I'm Kelly Henderson.
Yeah. I've had full blown conversations with people and they're talking to me so assertively that I'm like, wait, we must have had this conversation.
Oh,
I forgot.
My.
Was I drunk? Like, I don't know what it is. And then once they say something about music or like me playing guitar, I'm like, oh
that is so funny.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was having this conversation earlier in the week with Ashley Eicher, but we were trying to figure out, like, where do we know each other from? Because Nashville's just such that city that you've just known people forever and you don't remember how. And I feel that way with you. Do you remember how we
met? I actually remember the first time that I ever worked with you, which I don't know if it was the first time we met.
Okay.
But it was, and because I was already a fan of your work and I knew of you, it was that we were doing a corporate shoot for a brand had a sponsorship with.
Oh, and I was doing hair and makeup.
And you were doing hair and makeup.
Yes.
But the bummer was that they wanted like
natural.
Natural.
They're like every day. We like, don't want you to look too glam.
We've got Kelly Henderson here. Like, make me look hot.
That would be so fun. I know. We need to do another shoot just to do that.
Yeah. That was the first time I remember actually getting to be with you for any extent. Now, I don't know if we had met casually before then.
I feel like probably in a green room somewhere at an award show or some situation. We're always in the same circle.
Yeah.
So you've grown up here though, right?
Yes.
You're from Nashville.
My family moved here in the early 80s.
Okay.
And so I'm not born but raised. I don't remember. We were from Michigan originally.
Yeah.
But I don't remember.
Anything
Michigan.
Else? Has it Other changed than- so much for you? Because I feel like it's changed so much for me.
Right. When did you get here?
I got here in 2004.
Okay. So yeah, it has changed a ton since then too. I would say I think of Nashville like it's grown up. A little bit.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I think there is still a lot of the really charming parts that are maybe the Southern hospitality or overall like a warmth to people, friendliness. I mean, we can talk about some of like the gender stereotypes around like expecting people to be friendly all the time.
Right.
But I do think Nashville, like when we moved here, my mom used to say people honk their horn to say, hey.
Yeah.
Hey, Janet, like at the light, not to say like move
Southern.
Your ass, you're blocking traffic. So I think that's changed. Obviously traffic has changed. I think the restaurant scene is a really positive change.
That's a huge positive change. I agree with
diversity
that one.
Overall.
Yes. It's getting a lot better. Yeah. Yes. But what are some of the changes you don't like?
I sometimes am torn when I hear people say the new Nashville.
Oh.
Because I think, one, as not to sound like an asshole, but as somebody who grew up here and was part of the culture here, there have always been some really appealing parts of the, like, what the community is. And I think that's always been the most attractive thing about Nashville. Like, you can be a part of a community here. You're going to find, whether you're a creative or a business person or if, like, looking for a great family life, you will find that here because community is so important. And so there's a way where I sort of feel like people want to take credit for the new Nashville. And it's like, well, actually, I think you kind of need to credit Nashvillians. Like,
yeah, because it was always here.
It was always here. But I do think that having more business, having honestly more people that are our generation.
Yeah.
I think have really changed, like, adults, but still, like, youthful minded adults that are forward thinking and, you know, maybe not kind of the blue blood culture.
Right.
Like that was what's different about the Nashville that I grew up in was in some ways very different than country. It was more Southern. I mean, I'm a debutante.
Oh, wow. That just shook me. I did not see that coming.
So, like, just a different, that part of Nashville is still exists.
Yeah.
But I don't overlap with it as much. Except at Whole Foods.
Yeah.
I bumped into somebody I wanted to
Oh my God. I don't even have words right now that you were a debutante. What was that like?
You know, it was just like one of those things that you do.
Yeah.
You do that. And I think
that's very Southern.
Very Southern.
Yeah.
There's a, you know, huge ball. Nashville does it different than a lot of other stuff. I don't know. Wait, you're Louisiana.
Oh yeah. We had that too.
So would people do independent balls? Like, would there be like a Kelly Henderson ball?
I really didn't grow up in that world of Louisiana where I'm from, but they definitely had that. I'm trying to remember if it was a specific person, but I do remember. Yeah. Isn't it like a coming out party or something?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And so different cities do it differently.
Yeah.
I think Atlanta, you do like an individual party. Okay. In Nashville, there are charitable events.
Okay.
So there are two big debutante balls.
I think
here.
That's how it is in Louisiana.
And they essentially are charitable events. And all the girls, like, let's say it's one of them might be the winter of your freshman year of college.
Yeah.
And so all the girls that are invited of that year would all debut together.
It would be like, wow.
Yeah.
Do you like dance? What do you do with these balls?
You have a massive gown. So it's like a bridal gown. Like bought my gown at B. Hughes, which is like the bridal store.
Oh yeah. Wow.
And you dance. I think you have to wear, this is so, I didn't expect this to take this turn.
Me either.
You have to wear,
I'm just curious now,
elbow though, length kid gloves.
What?
White kid gloves.
Oh my God. I need to see pictures of this. We're probably going to have to find pictures of this for me to post about after this conversation.
And it's white tie, of course. So it's tie and white tie and tails for the guys.
Yeah. Yeah. As so you funny. Do. Okay. Well, that was the fun fact I've
and
learned.
That was the last time I was in white tie.
Okay. Well, so with being busy being a debutante, so let's say, did you always know you wanted to do music when you grew up?
No. I mean, I always knew that I was obsessed with music and that it stirred something in me that almost made me uncomfortable. Like, do you remember did you have like an alarm clock radio in your room?
Yeah, of course.
And I would have it set to either 97.9, which is our country station, or 107.5, which is like our pop station still to this day.
Yeah.
And like certain songs I remember being like woken up to and feeling like it would just almost like just stir me.
Yeah.
Like make me think, like, how do I, this is just almost it, really great songs are unnerving in the way that they kind of get under your skin or you can't get them out of your head. So I remember feeling that. I also was a huge Amy Grant fan.
Oh my gosh, I remember Amy Grant so well.
And so I would dress up, like this is middle school days, like I would dress up and hairbrush it in the mirror, you know, to Amy Grant, Heart in Motion.
Heart in Motion, yes. Oh my God, that was the best.
Yeah, but no, I went to college. I thought I was going to law school.
Oh, wow.
Just be practical and try and make a living. And you know, I think growing up here, one thing you learn is everyone doesn't make it.
Of course.
I mean, we're going to get into some of this probably later. Absolutely. Everyone doesn't make it. And so I had a bunch of, you know, like babysitters growing up. They'd move to town. Maybe they went to Vandy. They were singing jingles back when that was a thing. And then it wouldn't work out and they'd move home. And so I think I was really aware that not people, like lots of people don't make it. So you have to be really, really good. And I think even more than that, there has to be all this other stuff that collides.
Absolutely. The timing, the connections, all of it. Yeah. So you did go to college.
Yeah.
What do you have a degree in?
American politics.
Oh, oh my gosh. Naturally. Yeah.
But no, I mean, there are definitely times I went to UVA in Charlottesville, Virginia. I loved UVA. I sang in an a cappella group.
Okay.
Like some Lauryn Hill and some Christina Aguilera. Oh my gosh. But I don't know that I loved my college experience, but I don't know that it was productive for my music career.
Well, except for the singing group.
I mean, maybe, yeah.
That is was, that kind of when you started singing?
That was
when,
the first time that I was singing in out. Like, I wasn't just in the choir or like.
Right.
And people were like, oh, you're. Because my family growing up was not super musical. I grew up playing classical violin. And, you know, no one in my family was in the music business. They were in business. And so it wasn't like at home anyone was like, oh, wow, you are like kind of a good singer.
Yeah.
So I think the first time I really had feedback from the outside world that, oh, you might be kind of good at this and not just like, you know, anybody singing. Like that was the first time I'd really had that like feedback from other people. And I think, and I'll be curious what this moment was for you too, because I think everyone has to have a moment where someone else outside of themselves affirms that longing or that thing that you have, that curiosity you have about a, you know, a certain field or a passion that you have. Because very few people can do it with only their own, I don't know, like their own drive.
That makes total sense.
You have
sense
to have
to
someone
me.
Go, you're fucking good at that.
Yeah.
Maybe you should do that.
Yeah.
Or have you ever thought about, so you've got to have some other voices, I think, encouraging you.
I think so too. And I think it's a similar, I had a similar just path to what I do now because I didn't think about it as a job. Like I always knew I was really interested in red carpets and what people wore and what their hair and makeup looked like.
Yes.
But I got a PR degree.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. So when did you start? Or when was that first moment when you were like, wait, maybe that's a career?
So I came to Nashville to do, or I did an internship when I was in college in Nashville, and I just loved the music industry. And I was super drawn to that, but I just still thought, oh, I'll just do PR. But then you move here and, you know, kind of like what you're saying, not everyone makes it. It's really competitive and there weren't that many jobs at that time. Yeah. It was a super small industry. I didn't know anybody. So it was like, all the people from Belmont or Vandy who had the connections in the industry or whose parents were in the industry, they were the ones who got the first time jobs, you know? So I just had to start hustling and I did get a job in PR, but I hated it. And luckily during that time met another makeup artist who was just like, hey, I just need an assistant. I know you don't know what you're doing, but do you want to just come? And I was like, yup.
Who was it?
This girl, she doesn't even live here anymore. Her name was Alana.
Oh,
but yeah.
Weird. Okay. So yeah. You're assisting.
So I just was assisting and I just started learning and realizing how much I loved that world. I still was like, maybe I'll do wardrobe or maybe I didn't know what it was specifically that I wanted to do. And now that I think that's why I do a little bit of all of it. Yeah. Was that kind of what, so when you finally like someone was like, oh, you're pretty good at this. What was the next step? What'd you do?
So I was still in college and I was still, you know, got my degree. Graduated. I was studying for the LSAT, which is the entrance exam for law school. And I was starting to write songs at home just in my free time. And my husband, Jeff, we got married right out of college. Jeff would make me, I had never played out really. So I'd never played my guitar in front of anyone. I'm still not a great guitar player, but I was a really shitty guitar player then.
Yeah.
And he would, every Thursday we would have someone over for dinner and I would have to play something I'd written that week in front of them.
Oh my God.
Which is honestly now I would be so, it's so cringeworthy.
Yeah.
And we don't do that kind of stuff anymore either. We don't sit around as much and trade songs with friends like you do when you're just out of college, I think, and new, it's all new. But yeah, so our poor friends that would come over, they'd get a free dinner, but they, would have to endure some really shitty songwriting. And that we were in Atlanta at the time. And then we came back to Nashville like 2005 or six. And I started writing almost full time. I mean, as much full time. I had a jewelry line then, actually.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if we ever talked about that. But
no.
I had a little jewelry line. I'd fill orders at night. And then I'd write during the day. And yeah.
Just. So what parts do you like better? Do you like the singing or the songwriting? Or can you not pick?
I truly, truly, truly love singing. I am a ball of nerves. So I bring a lot of just my own shit to the table. So every time I go on stage, I don't know what it's like for you where these scenarios are. When every time I step out on stage, I'm nervous.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how low, like as far as the pressure it really should be, I am nervous and I'm afraid I'm going to completely fall on my face. So I would say what's tricky about that is every single day I do my job, I have to get over this big hurdle.
Yeah.
I did recently have like, I was working with an acting coach for a project that I'm working on right now. And she was like, have you heard of beta blockers? Oh,
have you heard of CBD?
So I would say I love singing. That's probably my favorite thing to do ever. But also it's like, did you ever see that Will Smith video of him? It was about skydiving.
I don't think so.
And it like the, I wish I could remember the exact quote, but it's on his Instagram somewhere. But essentially when you go skydiving, they say, okay, you're going to jump on the count of three, and they go three one. So they go one, two, and they push you out on three.
So you can't even fully think about it.
So you can't, because if you wait, you won't go. And so the moral of this, you know, the story is like the greatest joy or the greatest accomplishment is just on the other side of your fear. Mm-hmm. And I think about that a lot because I feel like I just walk around with a lot of fear, but all the things that we want are just on the other side of that fear.
Someone else has said that before on this podcast, and that's one of my favorite quotes. Like, whatever it is that you want is just on the other side of fear. You kind of have to jump.
Skydiving
thing is a really good analogy. Yeah, that too. Both.
Yeah. So.
So you were in Atlanta singing songs for your friends. How do you get to Nashville and get a record deal?
My whole journey as far as that goes went really backwards to the order that it normally happens for people.
What do you mean?
I got a record deal before I had a publishing deal, management, or really even any reputation in town. I was kind of quietly doing my thing with a handful of people that were not particularly plugged into Music Row at the time, writing wise. And I was shopped by my producer, kind of co-producing team, which was a man named Paul Worley, who produced Dixie Chicks, Sarah Evans, Martina, like all the records I grew up listening to.
Very famous producer.
Super famous and amazing human.
Yeah.
And a man named Jerry Smith. But they used to do this. I don't know if this is as much the way that people get shopped to record deals, but in 2012, we had made maybe a couple. Maybe we'd gone in and cut like three or four songs.
Okay.
They share the music with Capitol, with a couple other labels. And then you go in and we just did like little like conference room, you know, performances, acoustic performances.
So not like a full showcase. I feel like that's how they do it a lot now,
they do
right?
a lot of showcases now, I think. And I honestly think they go so much more by social numbers. Like, I don't think there was Instagram in 2012. It was brand new. Like,
yeah, it wasn't a
there was
thing,
maybe
for sure.
Facebook.
Yeah. Definitely Facebook, Twitter, but I don't think Instagram definitely wasn't a big thing.
Yeah. So we went in, I played like one 2012 Kelly didn't know was literally wearing only mascara. And that was a big day. And I think I was wearing flats, which now
you just didn't know.
I didn't know. And I think in some ways they found that charming. Like I didn't look like an artist.
Yeah.
And that kind of came back to bite me too, because I had a lot of learning to do about, I hate even saying it because I think you don't have to buy in. I think you can do it your own way. But I think there are just generally expectations that even if it's not a glammy, like super pretty, you know, fashion-y look, you have to have an identifiable look.
I agree with that.
As an artist. Mm-hmm. So especially then it was more like yeah, you needed to look, you need to do your makeup, you need to do your hair. I mean, I was told on radio tour that I was expected to not wear pants. Like I needed to wear shorts or skirts.
Oh, wow. That's a Me Too moment.
Right?
Jeez.
But I think that it's changed. I was hosting an event with Ashley McBride over the weekend, and I love, Ashley has such an identifiable look, incredible gray streak, you know, right? Like on her bangs, which is so gorgeous. And then these like really tight curls, and she's in jeans and she's in a tee, and it's not, she's not going to be like in some short outfit, but she has a very brandable, like she has an identity. So I don't think you have to wear the short skirt and tons of makeup necessarily, but you have to have an identity.
You have to kind of own your look.
Yeah.
Whatever that may be.
As dumb as it sounds. I mean, even back then they would be like, okay, so Lindsay L's the girl with the guitar, and
right.
Jana Kramer is the girl from the TV show. Like, what are right. you? I'm like, I'm the girl.
I just want to sing.
Who's like, really wants to write great songs and like, you know, but I think, you know, now I probably would have better answers.
Of course.
Too, but
it's so much easier to figure out. I think this goes with any sort of business, because I struggle with this brand wise too. It's like, what is your thing? Because it's so oversaturated, which obviously in music, there's a million girls who want to be singers and who are beautiful and who can do it. So what does make you stick out?
I do think it's helpful though, to have people in your life that can be an accurate mirror.
Okay,
and
what
sometimes
do you mean?
You need an outside perspective, because you're thinking about every single little part of Kelly Henderson, where I, as an outsider, might go, oh no, you're like sleek and a little edgy, cheeky, witty humor, straight talking, you know, boss bitch, but like still
fun. Can I write
that
down?
Yeah, totally. But sometimes you
just nailed it. That's so true.
Sometimes you need people around you that go, you're all like, we're all a lot of things.
Right.
So we got to distill it down to a handful of things that are the most. I think I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
I bring a lot of heart, and just, I've had a ton of therapy. So I think that's one of the things that, I don't know, hopefully is connective about me, is I can. Yeah. I mean, we all have days where we're just like, can't, you know, don't want to go there, or have to be more guarded, but I try and really connect with people. I really care about relationships. Also, I feel supporting empowered female voices and an empowered female perspective is really important. So I feel like a lot of my songs, even if they're more playful, like this last song that you were a part of, is a more playful, it's probably a younger song, but it's still an empowered perspective. So that's important to me. I don't know. It's ever changing too, right? You're like ever refining.
But as it should be, I think it should evolve, you know, as long as you have your foundation figured out.
Yeah.
So did you figure out who you were to get the deal, or was that a part of like the process?
I think what happened there more than anything, so I entered the business at a time of turmoil for that company.
Okay.
In that there was this huge merger happening. So the man who's signing me, Mike Dungan, who is still, I mean, one of my idols in the industry. I love him and his passion for music. And then he signs me, and then almost immediately he moves over to Universal. The ultimate goal being that he's going to unite these two companies. But for about 8 months, we don't know what's going to happen. And we're not kind of not supposed to be talking with him, but we know we think we're ultimately going to be working with him again. As far as like what worked and what didn't, I think I had to take more control over my sound. I think I had really well-written songs as I was first getting signed, and they did the same thing that I still think is like one of my big signatures for songwriting, which is there's a smart element to it. And I don't mean that in, I can be a little heady, but it's not one of my favorite parts of my personality. But it's like playing with words in like kind of a way that has a bit of a wink to it. So the first single was called Sorry on the Rocks. Like, I got this guy that always just like calls to say sorry when he's drunk. That's the only time he's like remorseful for his shitty behavior. So I think that was there, but I think production wise, I had this incredible producer, Paul Worley, who'd made, you know, had all these Grammys and had made all these famous albums. But I didn't know how to help him do me. So I think the music was not as original, not as edgy, I would sing, you know, a couple takes on something and I'd start to get a little texture on my voice and he'd be like, ah, you're done for the day. Because that's a style, like, you, not everybody wants a ton of, you know.
That's like one of my favorite things about your voice.
Thank you. I mean, that was where, as I started working with my next producer, Jason Linning, he'd be like, okay, go get another glass of bourbon.
Yeah.
You know, when I start to get a little texture. And so I think figuring that out and finding people that help you be you and set you up to be a really great version of yourself. So that I think was important. Finding a stylist. I mean, and that was one of those things too. Like there was this kind of chat going around the building when I was first signed. I had done a little private event for the team. It was in the basement of Maggiano's, which is just like a terrible location to like
so corporate.
Introduce someone to a, you know, their new team. And I'm wearing this little Free People sundress and I'm probably in a little wedge and don't have a ton of, you know, hair and makeup happening. And it got back to me that people in the building were saying, she's not sparkly. She doesn't sparkle. And then I had, you know, did the thing that an insecure, you know, person in their 20s that doesn't really know any better. I was like, fuck that. I'm going to be sparkly.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time. I probably lost a lot of time unto that altar of like, I'm going to look fucking sparkly.
Like to make everyone else happy.
I'm cussing.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. Well, maybe because it was like, oh, normal me isn't enough.
Yeah.
Isn't good enough. Or it doesn't look like that would be that's a big one for me too. Just like body image and beauty issues. Like I was not super cute. Like growing up, no one was like, oh, that Kelly Bannon is really cute. You know, like I was nerdy and I didn't know how to do my hair and makeup. I probably didn't know how to dress for myself. And like, just also when you don't know yourself.
Yeah. I agree with that. I was just about to say
really
that.
Really hard. I think you're never more attractive and powerful than when you
just own yourself.
Know who you are. Exactly. Yeah. And have a really strong sense of self. So there was a lot of kind of looking around and trying to make other people happy before I finally came to the end of that and was like, I think I need, the more I know myself, the more I'm going to be able to make the music that I want and play the part. I mean, because when you're on stage, you are a version of yourself.
It's a performance.
Exactly.
It's entertainment.
Yes. And I think you don't want me to wear the same thing that I'm like rolling around town, bopping over to Target in.
Right.
That's part, you know, but so I think that just, I think I'm a late bloomer and on a lot of fronts. And it took me a long, long time. Yeah. To really probably know what I wanted and not believe that I just would find the right answer asking other people and then do that.
So how did you get back in touch with yourself then? Because this deal went away, right?
So I actually think I was learning a lot about myself and stepping out into it as we were still having some really cool moments with Universal. Like a real moment, really great, powerful moment for me was Famous coming out. And that we disappeared and I went and made music with a new producer, Jason Linning. And I was like, the only chance I have, now that we've already had one failed single, now that there's a merger, the only chance I have is if I go away and I come back with something really different and fresh. And it worked. I mean, I think what was sad about that song is it was about, I don't know, 12 to 14 months before Kelsey's first hit.
Ballerini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love Me Like You Mean It. And I think we got pretty beat up over that song at country radio because it was progressive and pop leaning and kind of before that was acceptable. So we knew there were like huge sales numbers with that song and huge streaming numbers. But we didn't have time for a lot of that to really kick in and convince country radio that, but I think for me, that's the one that got away.
Yeah.
And then, you know, out of when something doesn't work, it can really, you can get in a bit of a tailspin about it. Like, what if I wasn't broken, but the system was broken? But instead, you internalize it and go, oh, I'm still broken and I don't have my shit together. And like, so you kind of go into, so I think I was like learning, oh, wait, when I step out and try something that feels like me, it can work. But and then when it doesn't work, what do I do?
Isn't that the hardest thing when you feel like you're being authentic to you and you feel so good about it and it feels just so true and then it doesn't work? Like not getting that validation back.
It was hard.
It's crushing.
But I, you know what? A friend of mine, I think Ruthie Collins told me this. Last summer, we put out 3 songs at the same time. Mm-hmm. They were all getting a lot of play on SiriusXM. All part of what they call their Highway Fine program.
Yeah.
But it was also for people that had never heard of me. They're like, holy shit, why are there 3 brand new songs from this person I've never heard of that are like all in my radio station right now? So there was a lot of love and there was also a lot of dislike.
Because it was what, oversaturating?
Or just you're being exposed to a bunch of people.
Okay.
And Ruthie said, it's great because you're like, the sooner you do something, okay, let's say you've got a casual fan or is like kind of listening, passive fan, yeah. Kind of listening.
Yeah.
If I do something that's really me, but they don't like it and they're like, oh, that's not for me. She's like, great, because you're finding your actual people.
That is so true.
But the more you're doing like kind of the in the middle thing, yep. Where like, yeah, I kind of like that. Like you don't want lukewarm.
No.
Really. As far as from a business perspective, like from an artist perspective, but you can kind of, lukewarm can feel okay because no one's saying, I don't like that.
And because it's numbers a lot of times.
Yes.
Quantity.
Totally. So I think learning that it's okay that people are like, I hate that, because other people are saying, I love that. Mm-hmm. And then you're finding your real people.
Someone told me one time that, I think it was Bobby Bones actually, because he's pretty polarizing as a person, you know?
Yeah.
But he's found so much success in that because either people are super interested or they don't know what to expect, and that's interesting, you know? And he's found his audience that way, which to me was a huge aha moment to just be like, right, you can't live in that middle ground, really. You have to really find your voice.
Well, I really see that on your stuff.
Thank you.
And I think there are in my moments where maybe I don't have as much courage, mm-hmm. that's where I want to be living.
Yeah.
Because I think, okay, this is a really silly example.
Okay.
But I was in Chicago over the weekend and I bought like some really gorgeous lingerie. Like just like a really beautiful bra underwear situation at a little boutique in Wicker Park. And I was like, I would love to put this on my stories because it's gorgeous and I'd love to shout out the brands.
Yeah.
But I feel like I would get like some backlash from some of the more conservative people that follow me or some of the parents of my friends. And I literally didn't post something on my stories, which is so dumb because I was like, ugh, I feel like somebody, I'm going to get some backlash for this.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have even been me in the underwear. Like I was like doing just a cute little flat lay. And I'm like, girl, we need to stop been, like, asking permission.
Exactly.
So I think back to your point about Bobby, even I think most people that tune in because they fucking love him.
Right.
But even the people that tune in because they don't, they're still listening. So he's still got their number.
100%.
So, and people tune in to hate as much as they tune in to love.
I agree. He's a smart man. So you find your voice a little bit more. Yeah. What's the next step though? Because I know you...
Well, then I left my deal. Which was hard because it's really expensive to make music.
Right.
By yourself.
So you need the backing of a label or something.
Are you comfortable? What is an average hair and makeup cost for a shoot?
Oh, you want me to say what we make?
Or like a range?
I think it can go anywhere between, you know, $1,200 to $2,000 for just one. And then you usually have 2 people and rates go up from there. That's not outrageous.
Like that's not a...
No, that's very
that's
normal.
Like that's a standard, right? Mm-hmm. So then you can assume like stylist is going to be somewhere in there too. And photographer is going to be, you know,
way more
than that.
Yeah.
So just think about those kinds of numbers. And so I had to really learn to piece things together and hustle to an extent. I like the word hustle and I also don't like it because I like the word hustle from a work ethic perspective. Totally embrace it from a work ethic perspective. For me, just because I've done so much therapy, I'm like, I don't want to embrace a thing where I have to like be grabbing and chasing because I'm like, I don't do that. I don't want to do that anymore. Like,
and it kind of sounds grimy, or like you would use people or just be out for your own goals and all of that thing. And I don't mean it that way either.
So more about like really, really work hard, really, really try and come up with opportunities where maybe I can't offer someone that rate, but I would say instead I can offer you this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to be really accommodating about your schedule. I'm only going to use you for this short amount of time.
Right.
So trying to come up with, you know, ways to be creative about how you keep costs down so you can continue competing at that same high level that you were at. But the hardest thing for me leaving the record deal was, one, you have a lot of credibility when you have a major label deal.
Totally. And not even like you have the credibility, and then you're talking about all the people you have to hire as like a freelancing, but there is, at a label, there's a radio department, there's marketing, there's publicity,
there's creative direction, there are graphic designers.
Yeah.
You're not paying a la carte for any of that.
No.
And there's vision, there's, I mean, resources just even to go make a record. So, and I loved my team.
Yeah.
And so for me, I felt we had had three singles go to country radio, and we just didn't have any heat after kind of the aftermath of Famous, really. And I just didn't think, I'd already reinvigorated the team once, like had to start over. And I just didn't know the likelihood of being able to do that a third time or a second time. And I wanted to make music and put it out, and I wasn't going to be able to do that. And it's not because it's the Big Bad label. They're just smart about their business, and they're not going to spend money on stuff that they can't put out. Or, you know, so I had gone and made an EP independently, and we just said, hey, we've gone and made music. I think it's time to move on. And they were really gracious, and they said, okay. They said, we love you. Go, like, good luck. We love
you. Did you ever think about quitting at that point? Was it scary, or were you just like, no, this is my dream and I just am going to do it. I'm going to figure it out.
Honestly, I don't remember thinking about quitting then. Do you have any moments when you've thought about quitting?
Oh, I mean, all the time.
I think about quitting now more because I actually have a lot of other opportunities that I didn't have then.
That makes sense.
I don't really think about quitting. Probably because I'm so stubborn. I'm just like, I will not give in.
Yeah.
I will not give in.
Yeah.
But there are moments like I've said this probably before. I haven't said who said it, but, you know, about a year ago, I was changing management and we had some stuff happening, and my manager was talking with a publisher like, hey, I really want you to take a second look at Kelly. We believe in her songwriting so much. We really want her to be getting some other cuts and not just writing for herself. And this person who's a major executive just looked at him and said, I mean, she's really already had her shot.
What?
So it's kind of like when your worst nightmare of what you think people might be saying about her, like, oh my God, she's really gotten fat since she's been married for so long. Or like, she's really looking her age right now. It's like the worst shit you think in your head someone might be saying about you. Oh, he was saying
it. He
actually said out loud to my manager. And that's where I got, man, I want to shut down those voices in myself. Cause people are going to say that. People are going to say something.
That's such a good point. Your worst fear, when someone else says it and the voice in your head is so hard to keep out anyway. Like, I'm sure in your head, you're saying these things over and over and over.
I don't know what your inner monologue is.
I mean, mine, it's different every day, but it's not good.
Yeah.
So if someone else validates that,
it's the worst.
I mean, it can send me into a huge tailspin. Yes.
So then that's like, okay, what do I do now? Like, I try and do things that make, like, really ground me.
Yeah.
And also my female friendships have been really, really important to me, just from the perspective of having people that can tell you what's true about you.
Mm.
Hey, guess what? You did this last year. Do you remember when that happened? Like when that happened, I told my best friend Brenna, and she was like, hey, she's like, do you remember last year when you didn't have a record deal, you didn't have management, because I just fired my manager, and you opened for Little Big Town at the Ryman and you got a standing ovation?
Wow.
And I was like, oh yeah.
That happened.
And just having people in your life that can help remind you, you know, we're going to have shitty days, and we're going to have days when the voices in our heads win.
Yep.
But if you can go kind of back to center, even like, take three deep breaths. I mean, that's so cheesy. I hate meditating. Like, that's not my thing. But even when I feel like my nerves rise up, just taking three breaths, or even this is a weird thing that I learned in therapy. So anything that's tactile.
Yeah.
Like even just like touching your pants on your leg, anything that's tactile immediately grounds you.
Really? Mm-hmm. So just to grab hold of it?
Yeah. Touch it or like breathe in and smell like, okay, that candle, like what do I smell? Anything that connects you with your senses just grounds you and kind of gets you, out of the spinning.
Yeah. I love that about having the good friends who can remind you of who you are.
Hell
because
yeah.
When I'm spinning in my head, that is the first thing that goes for me is
who
like,
who's your person for that?
Mary Hilliard, probably.
Really?
Yeah. Mary Hilliard Harrington. She definitely is like, what? When I start going in my, you know, it's like, I can be so defeated and she can just rip me out of that place and be like, well, you don't see the person I see.
You know, that is when I said earlier, accurate mirrors. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about. Like,
yeah,
here's what I see. And that's so powerful.
I love that.
I've never met Mary that I'm aware of. I've always heard about her. I mean, I know she's worked with Jerks forever. And
yes.
I know she was in PR before she was managing full time.
Yes.
And I'm sure we've been in a backstage room.
Absolutely, you guys
never
have.
Actually had a conversation with her, I don't
think. That's insane to me because this community is so small.
I know.
I've actually done a podcast with her that if you guys have not listened to, they should definitely go listen. But she is just like the biggest badass in Nashville.
So awesome.
I love her so much.
I think I have seen like photos of her office though, because...
Because it's probably pretty cool.
I think it must have been really beautiful or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not a stalker.
I think what your story is so interesting. I was just thinking about all of the things that have to go exactly right to have a hit song and to make an artist's career work. Isn't that crazy to think about?
It honestly, that will send me in the freak out zone because it's... And the other thing that, and this is something we had trouble with. And I think why we couldn't, you know, make more of my time at a major label is we would have like a bass hit, but we couldn't get three in a row. You'd have one little blip up. And then when that momentum is happening, you have to be able to come right behind it with more stuff to keep the story going.
To get kind of established.
Yeah.
Or, so is that what it is? Like, the three hits. That's what people say.
Yeah. Or not even like songs. It's like, okay, so you have this story around this song is happening and it's growing. And then you need to make a tour announcement. And then you need, or some other big PR story. And then you need, so you need like, it is this, I mean, we were talking about it. I don't know if we had pushed record, but about how literally their work is never over. And if you don't, close your computer and like shut it down. Feeding the story is constant.
So interesting. So do you feel like the, because there's a huge movement right now with women in country music, making the argument that they have just been shafted for years, which is 100% true. And you were kind of thrown into that time period. Wasn't
for
that?
For sure.
Did that affect things?
Yes. And what's amazing. So we had a top 40 on my first single, even though, you know, and then, so that was actually, they did a pretty good job, as sad as that sounds, to have like barely have a top 40. But I think what I've learned, and maybe it's just because I'm older now, I think then it was okay for everyone was talking about, oh, it's so hard to get on the radio for a woman. And I was like, I'm going to be the exception.
Yeah.
And I was satisfied with the idea of being the exception. And now I'm like, that is not fucking good enough. That is not good enough for our girls. That's not good enough for our like women that are entering college. That isn't good enough for me. That's not good enough for Marin or for Kelsey Ballerini or for any, like being the exception, that is bullshit. So I think that's maybe where my thinking has changed a little bit, is maybe just when I was younger, I was a little more self-focused and I just believed it would work for me. And so I wasn't as concerned with the overall,
like the greater picture.
Yeah. And now I'm
as a whole,
like really legitimately concerned that a little girl that's riding in her car that hears, I don't know, the one, what is it? Like their average radio station is maybe between 10 and 20% at best female. So she hears that one female voice and she's like, I want to be a singer when I grow up. And it, nope, that's not actually a viable possibility. So that is where I feel that we have to step in. And it's not, radio is not the bad guy. like radio is part of this whole system that has happened, and it's changed because this town is so interconnected. You can't look at any one thing and say that's the problem, because, you know, the average publisher can't justify signing a bunch of women writers because they're probably going to write female songs, and there's only a handful of women they could pitch that to. So they can't pay for that person's draw because they aren't going to see the royalties that they need. And because there aren't a ton of female songs being written, there are less great female songs floating around, probably just from a sheer volume perspective. So artists are pretty much have to write all of their songs. Like female artists, you just are not going to have that many like incredible outside songs to pick from. And I really think those are the songs that build this town. Mm-hmm. The House That Built Me, Girl Crush, those were outside songs.
Right.
And so, and then you've got labels signing less people, less women, because they can't get on the radio, and because there's probably, it's just so,
but it's a vicious cycle.
It's a weird cycle. And I mean, you have tons of people in your life that have spoken probably about, I mean, Bobby speaks about it a lot. There's a lot of different perspectives. I'm not the only perspective. I just think we're at a place where we have had so few women on the radio for so long that it's actually changed the way that we listen, so that I may not be able to even listen to other female voices with the same objectivity.
Wow. Because we've now,
we've like trained our ears to hear certain things. So I think even my bar for women is higher.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's getting any better?
I don't know. I think that there's the potential for streaming to really, really change the playing field, but country is sort of the last to adopt streaming. So we are, you know, our genre consumes a lot less music in the streaming world than other genres. I don't know. I mean, I think we're doing right now, we're educating. We're still educating. We've probably been educating for 5 years, 4 years. And then when everyone knows it's a problem, then probably it will start. But I still sometimes feel like we're in education, where like I'll get a tweet that's like, well, isn't it just that like women aren't making as good music as guys? You're like, oh, sir. I'm like, this is going to be a long tweet conversation.
How long do you have?
But yeah. And it's like, the other thing is, and I think Marin has said this, the most interesting thing about me is not that I'm a woman.
That's such a good point.
And it's not the most interesting thing about you, but because
it becomes the most interesting thing.
Yeah. So it becomes the thing you talk about, and I'm happy to talk about it, because we have to talk about it.
Of course.
But it's the thing that you talk about instead of like your music.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so.
Speaking of music, let's talk about your new music, because with that guy saying, first of all, that the music is not as good. I love this music. Thanks. I think it's so great for you. And it's completely to me, well, completely different from where you started. And it really feels like you found your voice, your style, your vibe. How does it feel to you?
So this record I made with Jaron Johnston, who is...
Oh, I didn't know this.
Yeah. Front guy amazing. For the Cadillac 3.
That makes everything make so much more sense.
Well, say what you mean then.
Because I feel like there was a lot of like garage band rock vibe to the back of it. And I totally recognize that immediately. Yes. And when you say Jaron, I'm like,
literally,
of course.
He uses garage band.
Oh, well, there you go.
Because he's kind of a little... he's grunge, a little grungy.
Yeah.
And
if you guys don't know Jaron Johnston, he's the lead singer of Cadillac 3.
Go check him out. He also has had tons of hits. I think probably like 5 or 6 number ones as a writer. And he's a Nashville native. So what's funny is we were both in high school at the same time. We didn't go to the same high schools, but we had a lot of common friends. Didn't know each other then. But making this record felt really relaxed, because Jaron is, he's really confident. He's like, he is one of those people that is really confident in themselves, but not in an asshole way. And so he's just like, this is baller. He's just like, this is badass. This is amazing. And I'm like, is this good?
Yeah. You know?
So that was really fun. And there were also a lot of Nashville natives on the project and in the studio, which was really wacky and cool and doesn't happen that often. But that was awesome. And I think I just felt a lot of freedom, because when you're not making a project for anyone else,
Yeah.
I felt a lot of freedom.
So you've done this completely on your own this time.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have no money now.
Hopefully you can make some back.
But it was really
good. Go
fun.
Buy the album. It comes out not until October though, right?
October 11th.
October 11th. But the single out right now.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
It's called Boys Don't Cry, yeah. Right? So I did this profile. You sent out to a couple of us girls in Nashville a breakup profile.
It was my favorite thing we've ever done.
It was so fun. And I think funny. Because
thank you for doing it.
Of course. So she posted on her Instagram all these breakup profiles. Let's do some of the questions because I think they're kind of fun.
Yep.
But this is interesting. You're married.
I'm married.
So how are you? Like, you're going back to the back in the day.
I mean, I had to think back really hard. And also, I was just like, as we were kind of brainstorming this idea, I did say, I'm like, is it creepy for me to do a breakup profile? Like when I'm married and I've been married for this song, my manager was like, but I think I actually had a lot of women, like a lot of my buddies reached out once they saw it on Insta and they were like, yours. Wait, I want to fill one out. You know?
Absolutely.
And so I think it's more just the fun of it. And
you're just relating to us single girls. Yeah, I get it. And you have a lot of friends who have probably gone through stuff recently okay. So in the breakup profile, one of the first questions is describe your last breakup with a movie. What did you say?
I did How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Because honestly, my
last... Were you that girl?
I had a really bad... Well, no, but just... I had a really bad breakup in college right before Jeff was my rebound from like my worst heartbreak.
Wow.
And it was this like super sweeping, overdramatic, like he was like in Africa and like FedExing me letters. And then we met in London for like a couple days because I was like going to be there and we overlapped for a few days. And then he came here to meet my family.
This is Jeff?
This is like whirlwind, my last breakup, how to lose a guy in 10 days. So literally... He comes here to meet my family and one day he wakes up and he's just like, I gotta go.
Oh my God.
I was like, what? He's like, I booked myself a flight. I'm gonna fly home. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, cool.
So that was fun.
So yeah.
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
He's still single. God bless him.
I mean, that does not surprise me because it sounds like maybe he had some commitment issues.
What did you answer for that
I
one
did
again?
Misery. I don't even know what that movie's about, but that title in and of itself just described my last breakup.
I'm trying to remember. Somebody did Ice Age. And 4-year-old virgin.
I definitely saw he's not that into
he's
you.
He's not that into you.
This is so funny. Okay.
I honestly can't remember if I did How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days or he's just not that into you.
Maybe,
I can't remember.
Maybe the latter.
I might have done the latter.
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days reminds me of when she brings the plant and she's like, this could be our baby. So creepy.
And doesn't she name his...
Oh my gosh, yeah. And we won't say what. Yeah. If you haven't seen that movie, go watch it. Okay, ideal revenge hookup. What did you say?
I said one of the Ryans.
Naturally. Like Gosling. Yeah. What's the other one?
Or
Reynolds?
Reynolds,
oh,
yeah. I think I said Gosling or Reynolds, one of the Ryans.
You can't go wrong.
Then one of my guy friends filled it out and for that answer he said, I'm told the correct answer is Ryan Reynolds. Because so many people put Ryan Reynolds as their...
Okay, Ryan Reynolds does not do it for me that much.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Ryan Gosling for sure. I'm not sure what it is about Ryan Reynolds. He seems like the perfect guy, and maybe that's the problem.
That's it. Sometimes and honestly, this is a lesson that I am learning about myself.
Okay.
Is that sometimes like the perfect cleaned up, pristine version of you is just not as sexy and not as compelling as the... You know, the real vulnerable.
Yeah. That's why I think Gosling, I'm like, you know, I was about to say sliding off my chair, but that's probably appropriate. Sorry, Mom.
Hello. You said
anything that ends with Hemsworth.
I thought that was amazing.
I mean, right, though? Specifically so Chris, because he's probably more in my age range. But, you know, Liam's single now, I think.
Yeah.
Well, put it out there. Okay. What's your post breakup anthem?
Well, we, of course, said Boys Don't Cry.
Oh, naturally. It should be. It should be a lot of people.
But there's so many great songs. I need to do a playlist. So I'm going to do, because we were talking about, this whole idea came out of talking about the idea of a breakup anthem.
Yeah.
And almost like, not a way to celebrate, but a way, you know, breakups suck. And then
the worst.
When you just like embrace the fact that it's happened, you're not going back. Like, then you can actually have a really kind of fun
yeah.
time. And whether just that's rebounds in. Or yeah, or it's, you know, just like hanging out with your girls. So I need to do a good playlist. That's just like all the best.
Oh my God. A good playlist with all of our songs that we said.
Yeah. Actually I should just do all the songs people said.
That people mentioned. That's like the best playlist. Yeah. Make it a Spotify playlist.
What did you say?
I said Truth Hurts by Lizzo. I mean, if there, that to me, I'm like, there is not a better breakup song except for Boys Don't Cry.
Thank you. Hashtag plug.
Friend likely to stop you from drunk dialing your ex and slash their tires.
Same answer.
I know, and I also said her earlier, obviously Mary Hilliard is the one who like calms me down.
I really was thinking that Mary Hilliard is like, why is this woman that I've never met literally tagging me in 19 posts? She's like, bitch, she step back.
Do you know what she did? All she did was text me and say, whose tires are we slashing?
That's cute. Yeah. I said Carrie Underwood for that. Because,
that's amazing.
I mean, truly. That was like still one of my favorite songs in
She's
videos.
She's like a pro slash tire person.
Yeah.
However you say that. Okay, well, so you have all this music coming out. You guys go check it out. But I have to talk about your podcast because I've been binging. Did you accidentally fall into this like I did?
Okay, so this actually ties into like when I was leaving my record deal, I was looking for ways to connect to fans and take my story back because I felt like my story had been being told by other people, but not, I didn't have control around the way that I was telling it and how much of it and what parts. So, and that's not anything specifically negative about the record label. That's just what people that are like PR people do and what marketing does. Is they package it.
Of course, because they have to. That's how you sell something. Yeah.
But so I kind of wanted to unwrap it. So
yeah.
And I just was obsessed with podcasting in general. I just think it's such a cool, intimate way to learn stuff and just fan out or, you know, hear other people's perspectives. I just love it from a storytelling perspective.
Yeah.
I also love some of the more elaborate podcasts that really have a high production value. Like, I mean, I listen to both. Like I listen to My Favorite Murder, which is a pretty low production value. Yeah. I don't mean that as in a rude way, but it's just very casual. And then I listen to things like Radiolab and Reply All that are highly, highly produced. And I love those too. And I just think it's a really unique genre. So that was like 90 more seconds on that answer than you probably ever needed, but I just was obsessed with podcasts, so it made sense. And then we just were like, well, what do I know about? What can I talk about?
So you talk about the music industry. It's called This Nashville Life.
Yeah.
And it's from the perspective, which is so cool, of someone going through it,
right?
Because you're telling your stories, but you also bring in other people to do interviews and just tell how to get in the industry. Even things like, I was listening to one about how songwriters are paid. And I work in the industry and I thought that was so fascinating
to
hear the breakdown.
It's so confusing.
It's so confusing.
So most people, I mean, even a lot of songwriters don't know how they get paid.
Yeah.
And so that's one piece was like, I went to school studying something else. So I didn't study any of this. So I had to learn a lot of stuff just on the job. And the other thing that's been really cool about the podcast is I think it's a place for people who maybe haven't moved to Nashville yet, but they're thinking about it.
Yep.
And they can kind of test out some of their ideas and learn, you know, about what it's really like. And I hope like it's kind of like a tutorial.
Well, because I know a question I get all the time is, well, how did you get into this? Or how, and I don't even know the answer really, but I do think, you know, this town is a lot about connections or who you know or knowing where to go.
Yeah.
And your podcast does give some insight into that.
I try.
Yeah. Like there, you said, you know, BMI has an open door. Like I wouldn't have known that. That's a publishing company.
It's a PRO, which is essentially, don't worry.
This is where I got confused.
No, but it sounds like EMI is a publishing company.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Probably still it's been bought, but BMI is essentially the way you get paid, but they have incredible relationships with publishers and with writers because they represent, there's only three companies that really do this, ASCAP, CSAC, and BMI. So they're going to represent a ton of people. And if you come in and you're good, they're going to connect you with someone.
Right.
And that's not going to immediately get you a publishing deal or immediately get you songs on the radio, but that's going to be that. I think all we're ever looking for is the next step forward.
I agree.
One step. It might feel so small. It doesn't matter. It's like one step closer.
But in Nashville too, it is literally one connection leads you to the next. Yes. That leads you to the next. Yes. And like,
do you have a story that's like that for you?
Oh, I mean, everything has been like that for me. It's literally from the first makeup artist that I worked with to then I was in, you know, some music videos back in the day. And, but yeah, you meet crew people that way. And I met people that worked at production companies that could help me get to the next step. Then that met, then through that working and doing extras, hair and makeup, I met Mary Hilliard and Dirks and like started working with him. And then because I was working, you know, it's just like, it just,
yes,
it just kept going.
Yeah.
And it still to this day does that.
And that is why you cannot prejudge any one person's value to you or your story or where you want to go, and not to be calculated about it, but kind of, you don't know who is going to connect you to that next thing. And not to go around looking like who's going to connect me, but the person that you, okay, I have a job that we aren't really allowed to talk about yet, but that we'll be announcing in it's another part of like what I'll be doing probably in a bigger way next year, maybe later this year we'll get to talk about it. And the whole way I got to this job was this girl who was a recent college graduate had listened to my podcast. And then when the woman who ended up hiring me for this gig went out starting to search for talent, she just asked this girl, like, who do you know in Nashville? And she was like, I don't really know anybody, but I listen to this girl's podcast. And it's like, everybody matters. Like the random, yes. And she had just had like taken the time to like meet with her after she'd been speaking on a panel, and like meets with this little college kid. And not, sorry, if you're in college, you're not like a little college kid, but
you matter too.
You matter too. But she took the time to meet with this girl. And then this girl is how, you know, she found her way to me. It's just, you never, ever, ever, ever know how you're going to make your way.
I agree with that. And I know in my career specifically, relationships have been extremely important. So I think that goes for Nashville. I think that's like entertainment industry,
yeah,
kind of any industry. It's just like you're saying, like never count out anybody.
Yeah. And be kind.
Yeah. There you go.
I mean, you don't have to kiss everybody's ass, but just be like a nice human to work for and show up prepared.
Yeah. But do your job. Kind of simple. Oh my gosh. Okay, so the podcast is This Nashville Life. Where can people find that?
All the places,
anywhere you listen to podcasts. Search This Nashville Life. New music is out.
Yes.
But the album is fully out October 11th.
Yes. You can pre-order it. Okay. Right now we actually have some like really cute merch too. Sorry to be that person, but like I actually am obsessed with some of the stuff that we dreamed up. So the next single that comes out is a song called Diamonds.
Yeah.
And the hook is Diamonds Are the Way I Get Stoned.
That's so cute.
It's almost like a take on Marilyn Monroe's Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, but it's really about like a love story.
Oh,
so like one of our T's is like stoned, and then it's like with a little diamond in the middle. And I'm
cute.
Like, yeah, it's like some cute
Where
shit.
Do people find that?
That's my website. So just kellybanna.com.
Kellybanna.com.
And you can order music there and stuff. And then the podcast, we've already like, we aren't in a new season yet, but we're hopefully about to be soon.
Oh, cool.
And we've got some episodes with like Leslie Fram.
Ooh, at CMT.
Who's at CMT. Yeah. We talk a lot about women in radio and also about mentoring people and kind of paying it forward. Do you know who Matresa Berg is?
I've heard that name. She's a songwriter,
she's
right?
She's a songwriter.
Yeah.
And she wrote Strawberry Wine.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay, hi.
So her stories from like being 19 and 20 in the business in this old boys club are just insane. And her episode, I mean, none of these are out yet, but that's what's coming in the next like month or so, hopefully.
I think what's so cool is, you know, I was like, oh, well, I'm not trying to make it in the music industry, which sounds kind of dumb because I work in the music industry, but like it was fascinating to me. And I'm not even a songwriter or like anything that I can relate to in my business.
Except you probably know, like everyone you know is
in the business. You're right. So maybe that's why. But I just think it's interesting for everybody.
Thanks. So I hope so too. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like I listen to like Freakonomics and stuff like that. And it's like, I'm not like into like,
you're not doing that.
I don't do that, but I still think that their storytelling is great. So hopefully there's something for everyone, but.
Where else can people find you? Like, what's your social media handle?
Social media. So my name is Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-I-G-H, which is
where we're different.
Pain in the ass. I can't tell you, if I have envy, other than your thighs, I probably also have envy for the fact that you're
just a Y.
Just a Why?
It's so simple.
I can't tell you. I spell that for someone every single day.
I can only imagine.
And I was like named after a little old Irish lady. So it's a Gaelic spelling. It has some like family history or whatever, but it's a pain in the ass. But if you get there, if you can get to Kelly with an E-I-G-H, you'll find me really easily.
And it's Bannon, B-A-N-N-E-N. Yeah. I used to think it was O-N.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so at just, Kelly Bannon mm-hmm. and kellybannon.com, This Nashville Life.
Oh, and if this is coming out this week.
Yeah.
Wait, can we ask your listeners to fill out a breakup profile?
Absolutely. I was just going to say, for Boys Don't Cry, go to Kelly's Instagram and she has a blank, right? The breakup profile,
blank
one. And you can fill it out too. And what, submit them back to you, right?
Yeah, just tag me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'll see them and I can share them.
And repost them or whatever. Yeah. It was super fun. I actually liked to do that.
Yours was hilarious.
It's a little therapeutic or something.
Thank you for doing that.
Okay. I'm really glad we finally did
this. Thank you.
You guys go check out Kelly and thank you for listening.
Bye.
This is Kelly Henderson and you've been listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast. I truly believe that every one of us has a little velvet and a little edge. So it's so important to remember that to be strong, you must be soft too. Thank you so much for sharing in those stories with me. You can follow Velvet's Edge on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as velvetsedge.com. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me every Wednesday for more conversations on lifestyle, beauty, and relationships. Thanks for listening.